on this edition of The Self-Publishing Show.
I decided that was going to be my brand. Whether it was going to work or not, that's what I could give. I can't give advice on writing or all this other stuff yet, but I can be kind to people. That's what I built it on. So it's kindness first in everything that I do, and people like it. People started responding to it.
Publishing is changing. No more gatekeepers. No more barriers. No one standing between you and your readers. Do you want to make a living from your writing? Join indie bestseller Mark Dawson and first-time author James Blatch as they shine a light on the secrets of self-publishing success. This is The Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
Hello and welcome to The Self-Publishing Show. It is me, James Blatch.
And me, Mark Dawson.
We're recording this for that in-between period, in between Christmas and New Year, but the self-publishing world never stops. And we have a cracking interview today with a wonderful romance writer coming up in just a moment. But before then, Mark, we do have to mention again, we should mention because it's an exciting thing to do, our Facebook challenge for 2023.
Yeah, so prior to the launch of the Ads for Authors course later in January, middle of January, we're going to do a week before 7-day challenge on setting up a simple Facebook ad to find subscribers for our mailing list. So one of the most important things that we can do as authors, in fact, probably the most important thing aside from writing great books, is to find authors and put them in a place where we can easily get to them and tell them about things that they might like. So we're going to use Facebook ads to do that. It's one of those exercises where you will come away with readers at the end of it. That's the I'm fairly confident that everyone will be able to find readers through the strategies that we'll be using in the expedition, as we call it. So we'll be looking at setting up an account, simple research, targeting, images, copy, in bite-sized videos that I will do just after Christmas. So looking forward to that. As we record this now, in the middle of December, we only announced this about 3 days ago, and there's already 1,000 people in the Facebook group we set up for it. So it's going to be a vibrant group. I think lots of things going on, and you should, if you're interested, you should definitely hop over there and join the group now. And James is now going to give you the link.
It's selfpublishingformula.com/Facebook challenge. I think that's what we came up with last time, wasn't it?
Hope so.
Yeah, well, it is anyway. We'll make sure whatever we say points in the right direction. So, so slash Facebook challenge after our domain name. I've been doing Facebook ads through my, I don't know what the expression is, but I'm doing lots of them today. So we have book launch on Monday. As you say, it's the middle of December. It's Friday the 16th we're recording this.
Yeah.
Book launch on Monday for Fuse for E&W Sainsbury. And I've got my book bub next week. So I've got my 5 free days. So I've had fun putting a Santa hat on a Vulcan for some of my imagery, because actually good. my free day includes Christmas Day, so I thought have a bit of that going on. So yes, still going well on Facebook ads. I've been running some for a free promo for another book in Fuse this week, and they've been down to 9p, which has been great. But you would expect to get pretty good value for money on free books. But my book has been going at still 12 and 13 pence.
Yeah, it's very good.
And that's paid. So I'm really pleased at the moment. Definitely Facebook, I think, is the place to be at the moment for whatever reason. Okay, so that's our main thing to talk about. Our second thing to talk about is that we have our guest today is Avery Maxwell. And I actually met Avery for the first time in Florida this year. And then I hung out with her for a little bit because she joined us on our retreat, which was rudely interrupted by Hurricane Ian. So didn't get to see a lot of her, but she was a really lovely person to meet and talk to. She's got a great backstory, is a brilliant and adored writer by her fans. And she's done really, really well. Published by Lucy Score and Tim's company. That's what she said, publishing. This is Avery Maxwell.
This is The Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
Avery Maxwell, welcome to The Self-Publishing Show. I know I do like it when I'm interviewing somebody and all I can see is naked men behind you. So,
yeah, that's...
all those torsos. Where would you romance writers be without those chiseled torsos? Do you have chiseled torsos? I don't know. Ripped.
Chiseled?
Ripped. Chiseled is more of a... chin.
A jaw thing.
A jaw thing. Chisel. This is why I write military aviation.
Well, it's funny because we did this room for my office. It used to be the dining room. So when you walk into the house,
we put up doors, but they're glass. So it's the first thing you see.
Yes.
So my kids are like, Mom, like, what my 15-year-old.
What if I bring home my friend's mom?
Yeah. I'm like, listen, Mom's making money.
Yeah.
Mom's paying. This is what's doing it.
Mom's paying for the house. She writes instruction manuals. Yeah. That's what you should you should describe it. Avery, it's really lovely to have you on the show. I know we're going to have a great chat tonight about romance and about you. And I think SPF probably comes into your life a little bit as well. So let's start with your writing, which was not that long ago. You didn't start that long ago, did you?
No, I published my first book in June of 2022.
Wow.
2020, sorry.
Oh, 2020, yes. Yeah. So I said June of 2022. Yeah. That's really.
No, sorry.
You're a lockdown writer.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was a stay at home mom for, I'm going on 15 years now that I've been a stay at home mom. We moved 12 hours away from our friends and family right before COVID. And then we got here and everything shut down and we're all kind of like stuck together. And I have four kids, so I was going room to room trying to help everybody get online, and it just really brought out the worst version of myself. Like I've never been more unhappy with the person that I was during that time. And a lot of it just had, I was miserable. Like everybody was unhappy. Everybody was trying to do the best they can with school, and I'm not very technically savvy, so trying to help them get on, it was pretty brutal. And so finally I gave up. I was like, you know what? We're done. This remote learning is not working. I emailed the school and I said, we're going to do our own. I'm going to set up a lesson plan. And so we did. We did reading, writing, and math every day. And that's all we did. So when the kids would do their writing, so did I. And it really started off as just like journal entries. Like I was just kind of writing to myself, like trying to get myself back to where I was happy with myself. And so then the kids started saying, they're little at the time. You know, like, well, what do we write? So we did reading first and I said, well, let's do some fan fiction. So write where you think your story leaves off, like wherever you want to see those characters go. And so they would just kind of write these like silly little stories. And then so did I. And before I knew it, I'd written an entire book in just a few months and I didn't really know what to do with it. But my friend from home was a developmental editor. She's like, let me just take a look at it. So she did. And she's like, well, now we've got to do something with it. And so I kind of jumped in and that's where SPF came in for me. Cause it was like, I literally published. And then I was like, oh no, like I have no idea what I just got myself into. But it worked. And I started taking every kind of class I could take. And actually SPF came in a little bit later. I took other classes and I had a mentor and I kind of did all kinds of different things and nothing was really working. And then I found SPF. And then things just kind of started taking off.
That period with young children in lockdown, I mean, I escaped it because my kids were older. They were teenagers. They basically looked after themselves.
Yeah.
But I have parents who went quickly. I was going to say slowly insane, but they didn't. They went quickly insane and got to the end of their tether because that was hard, right?
It was hard. You know, I had 2 7-year-olds, a 9-year-old and a 12-year-old. And the 12-year-old is my only girl and she's pretty self-sufficient. She always has been. But the boys, you know, they had never really been on Chromebooks before. So not only were we trying to figure out how to do lesson plans, but we were also trying to figure out how to get these little 8-year-old hands on Chromebooks.
Yeah.
So it was
and all at the
really
same
rough.
Time.
Yeah. And so they all had to be on that. You know, it started off, everybody had these great plans, but our county wasn't equipped to have all of these children online at the same time. So things were crashing and then, you know, it's mommy. And so literally my husband works upstairs and all he would hear all day is mom, 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 mom. And me running like around in a circle around the house, trying to go from kid to kid to kid. And it was exhausting. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. Like I've always had huge respect for teachers, but it just, it brought out the worst in me.
Yeah, no, I definitely don't have that temperament. So the writing exercise literally started as something you thought might work with you and the kids and would be a way of surviving this time.
Yeah. I mean, so for them, it was really just about getting them in the habit of writing. They're still working on, you know, one of them was still working on his letter formation. So it was really just like a journal for all of us. But then, you know, they need ideas and they needed to do different things. So I would have them read and then have them pick up where the story left off. And mine originally was just journals. It was like, you know, dear Avery, like, let's figure this out. Let's, what are you unhappy with today? Let's figure out how to fix that. And then that turned into, well, if the kids are writing fan fiction, like, what can I write? And so my very first character actually, like, physically is a physical representation of me. She's a 6-foot blonde. You know, she's very quiet. She very rarely swears. Like, so there's a lot of, like, my personality in her. And I took that and just, I took like me and fictionalized it completely. And it started off a story, and I didn't really know story structure or anything other than having read a lot myself. And so I just kind of wrote it, and it was giving me something to do. And it was giving me a purpose that was not just mom and wife and teacher and house cleaner and, well, you know, all those day-to-day chores.
Even more than that, probably if you were sort of unhappy with that version of yourself that was there, did that become therapeutic writing it out?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things that I was able to take, you know, so her name was Lainey, a lot of Lainey's trauma, you know, and while it was vastly different from my life, my feelings went into that. So everything that I was feeling at that time went into her turmoil in the story. And it, you know, that's the first lesson that I learned in writing, was that the more I connect to the characters, the more the readers are going to, you know, everybody really liked her. And I realized it's because she was real. You know, there's so much of me in her that just, and I continued that. And actually, as I wrote more stories, I ended up connecting more with the male characters, which is funny. But so there's a lot of me in all the characters. But yeah, it's funny how it started. Just
And you were you a romance reader?
I was. So about 3 years ago, I had cancer, and I had kidney cancer, and I had a partial nephrectomy, and the kidney cancer was actually the easiest part. I had a really bad recovery. So for almost a year, I was in bed and I couldn't move. Every time I moved, things would not heal properly. So for about a year, all I could do was read. So the kids would come in, you know, and see me, and they were really little at that time, but they'd sit on the bed with me and I would read, and ended up reading like a book a day. And that's really what got me back into reading, was not being able to do anything else. You can only watch so much TV. You can only you know, do so many things, but your mind gets really focused on the words as you're reading them. And it helped get me through it.
So your Lainey character, this was a romance. Was it the story that you wrote?
It was. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've always been, listen, like, I'm a Cinderella fan through and through. Like, I love the Happily Ever After. I've always, ever since I was a little girl. So the idea that I could take, you know, this unhappy version of myself and turn it into something that was going to end happy was really therapeutic. Yeah. Like, it gave me something to work towards. You know, if Lainey can get there, then so can I. You know, we can all kind of make it through this.
Yeah.
So it was good.
So tell us about that that early phase. You did, not untypically, loaded it onto KDP and then said, well, I understand why I'm not a millionaire. What's happened?
Yeah.
They start courses.
I didn't have a lot of expectations. I actually didn't even think that I was going to write another book, but my brain apparently knew better than me. So when I was writing, I had all these other characters in that story that just naturally lended themselves to another story. So I had a few readers originally, and they're like, who's the next one? We really want to see this. And I was like, well, I don't know what to do with this. Okay. You know, I've read series. Like, I knew that they existed. I knew that there was something that I could do. It's like, well, let's just start. So I started writing it, but I was also a stay-at-home mom. So my day was, I would get up with the kids, get them to school. You know, they went back to school. No, I'm sorry. The first four books I wrote, they were still home.
Oh, wow.
So we do the school, we do remote learning. And then I'd get dinner ready. I'd do all the normal mom stuff. And then they'd go to bed at 8. And from 8 at night till 3 in the morning, I would write.
Wow.
And so it was like 2 years of just me sleeping 3 or 4 hours a night. And it's not sustainable. It's not realistic. But I also realized that just writing the books wasn't enough. So I had to take some classes. And I was very lucky early on that I did have some readers that just found it. And I put it on Booksprout, and people liked the stories. So that gave me the motivation to keep going. But then you have to do all the learning part of it, because it's not just writing the stories. It's figuring out promotions and social media and advertising. And I actually started with the advertising classes, the SPF. And then I went back and I was like, I need to really go back to the very beginning and figure out. So I basically backtracked. I did it all backwards. But I put it out there and then went back.
The books had a natural organic set of sales that you could see that there was something there worth marketing, right from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was very lucky. I think people connected with the story right away. And I have since gone back, the first two, I've gone back and had them re-edited. But the story is the same as it originally was. So
what was the editing, like copy and proof or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I forgot what the question was.
Yeah. So did I. I'm so absorbed in the story. I suppose you saw that there was, the books were doing organically doing quite well. So that was all motivation, A, to continue, and B, that you could invest in the kind of the marketing side of things.
That was something that I, you know, the first book, I think the first couple of months I made like a couple $100 and I was like, okay. And so my husband kind of sat me down and he's like, if this is something you want to do, you need to decide, like, is it going to be a hobby? And if it's a hobby, you can't be writing from 8 at night to 3 in the morning because you are not like fully there for everybody. So we need to figure out this out. Like, if you want to do this as a business, you need to invest in it as a business. And so we kind of went through everything. We made a business plan. We looked at from top to bottom, like, was this something that I felt like I could make a go at? And it was something for the first time that was, I had built myself and I really, really wanted to make it work. So I was like, yeah, I want this for myself. I want to be able to prove that I can do something that's not just being a mom. And I don't mean that in a negative way. There's nothing better than being a mom. And I'm very privileged to have been able to be a stay-at-home mom, but I kind of lost myself too. And this was something that I was building and I was able to reinvest. So everything that I made for the first 2 years, I put right back in. I never bought myself anything. I never paid myself. It went back into learning. It went back into advertising. It went back, and still to this day, like, I, you know, I'll get a check and it sits there and I'm like, okay, well, what are we going to do? And so it's only recently where we're like, okay, well, maybe we can redo a kitchen now. Yeah. You know, cause it's like, it's just sitting there. Like, I'm doing well enough that I can do certain things, but I still have that mentality of like, I'm not there yet. I need to work harder. I need to reinvest in myself.
You can actually start spending some of this money you've been making. Have you allowed yourself to do right. that now?
I did. We actually redid our kitchen and we redid my office. So it was two big spends. And, you know, I kind of set goals for myself every year. So this year it was, you know, I want to be able to pay for a family vacation, or I want to be able to, you know, contribute to the family, which I've never done before. You know, so now it's the kids' sports camps in the summertime.
I think the motherhood period is worth just talking about, because I think my mother was actually the same. Looking back, she got to that. She was a very proud stay-at-home mum, as a bit of an American expression, a housewife, I guess we used to say in the UK. and she was she thought that was probably best for the children. That was her view and the best way. But then I remember I was about 10 years old. The twins, my younger brother and sister, were 8, and she wanted to do more at that point. And I think that's fairly normal thing. Even if you do decide you want to stay at home mum, there's a bit where you want to be like grown up again. And it's not to say that children's company is not amazing. I don't think anyone will take it as you disparaging the idea of staying at home, but there comes that point where you want to be grown up again.
You know, so we I got married right after I graduated college, and then we got pregnant shortly after our honeymoon, and we decided pretty quickly on that being a stay-at-home mom was financially the most responsible thing we could do, because everything I was going to make was going to go to childcare anyway. And we really wanted that piece of, I wanted to be the one raising them. I wanted to be the one teaching them manners. And, you know, it's exhausting, but that's something that I really wanted to do. But as I got older, I realized that I never really used my degrees. I have 2 degrees and I've never used them. And so COVID really kind of hit that home for me. With everybody working from home, I'm like, who's going to hire me after being a stay-at-home mom for 20 years and not really having any outside work experience? You know, I have a ton of life experience, but that doesn't equate to, you know, someone hiring me, even with my degrees that are probably going to be useless in 5 years. And I didn't realize how much I would struggle with that until it started like sitting there, like, I'm not going to be able to contribute and in any meaningful way after they're out of the house. Like, what am I going to be able to give back to the family? And it started, I was like, well, I could work here, I could work there. And I filled out applications and I was like, maybe I'll work part-time and just kind of get back into it. And no one was going to hire me.
Right.
And that was kind of set in this whole spiral where I was like, I want to be able to be something when my kids aren't here. I want to be able to contribute. And so that's part of like my motivation. People are like, well, you know, how do you do it all? I don't think that's realistic. I think that's something that it was a huge disservice, you know, to me growing up, like telling all these little girls, like, to be a modern woman, have it all. I don't think you can. You can have it all a little bit here and a little bit there, but there has to be a give and take. And so I did. I work really hard to do it.
Yeah. And I think be careful what I say here, but I do know people who sort of do have it all, and it's hard and occasionally miserable and very stressful the whole time. So there's a price to be paid if you're going to try and have it all. Anyway, enough of that. Let's talk more about books and success. Yeah. So you started getting to grips with the marketing side of things. And you said you had basically had a series because you are the characters, and you had maybe 4 or 5 books at this point when you started running ads for the first time? Or
when I first started, I spent a lot of money on ads badly. Like, I spent a lot of wasted money on ads. And then I hired a mentor who tried to help me. And my brain just really struggles with the whole process. And that's why when I found SPF, like having the pictures to be able to go back and forth and see like the videos and pausing and go and see like where I was, that was super helpful to me. But then at some time I was like, you know what, I can't do this all. And so after the 4th book, I really made a huge push and hired someone to run some ads for me.
Right.
I was like, let's see if this is going to work. And it did. And so we kept doing it that way. And then I put out 2 more books, and then I actually signed with a publisher, and we've just kind of exploded since then.
Those original books. So we'll talk about your publisher, our mutual friend, in a moment. Did you sign all your books, or do you still have some just self-published yourself?
No, I signed them all over.
You signed them all over. Okay. So we can reveal the big reveal that your publisher, is that what she said? That's what she said. Publishing, which is Lucy Score and Mr. Lucy.
Mr. Lucy, yes.
Over there in Pennsylvania. And they don't have many authors. It's a boutique little operation, but you are, know Lucy's such a big fan of yours, and she was so excited for us to meet you in Florida earlier this year, which was great. We even had a hurricane together, didn't we?
We did. That was insane.
Was insane. Slightly surreal, that whole period, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it was such a great week, and then it literally blew in out of nowhere.
Yeah. Well, out of nowhere, at the same time as they spent a week telling us it was on its way, but all the locals like Nathan were saying, yeah, it's not going to come
It'll
here,
don't worry. It'll be fine. It'll be fine.
A bit blowy for an afternoon, but it'll be fine after that. But in the end, we all had to get out of Dodge, didn't we? But anyway, so what's that experience been like? Is that basically everything you wanted, that somebody else is doing all those Facebook ads and all that marketing?
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's still, I mean, there's still a ton of work that I do. You know, I think maybe working 12 to 14 hour days gone down to like 8 to 10.
Yeah.
But, I have a very tough time with ads. My brain, I really struggled with that. And it was something that I would spend like 4 to 5 hours a day on trying to figure out and make them work. And when you can just kind of hand that over and say, okay, let me just work on this piece of it, it's a huge relief, you know? And I was able to be a mom again, like have all that time. They're very good at what they do, and they're very good about pushing us to be the best that we can at what we do.
Yes. So you're left with what areas of marketing do you do? I guess your Facebook group, right? Your authors, your readers.
Yep. So I do all social media. I do the writing. I do, you know, we'll sit down, like we're about to have a meeting tomorrow. We'll sit down, we'll plan out the launch for my release in January. But they do a lot of like so they set up I switched over to one of their editors. So they set up the editing, they set up the covers. And then I really just, I write and I work on the social media piece and stuff like this.
Yeah. And let's talk about the books.
Yeah.
So Happy Ever After.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is this friends to lovers, enemies,
oh,
Meet cute.
We've got a little bit of everything.
Okay.
A little bit of everything. We've got, yeah, I mean, so in each book, there's probably a different trope. I definitely have the ones that I gravitate towards more. Like I really like the forced proximity, enemies to lovers. But it's all mostly small town. I write small town billionaires. So there's a lot of, it's a lot of fantasy because how often are you going to meet a billionaire in real life, right? But yeah. The small town piece keeps them, you know, relatable.
If you do meet a billionaire in real life, they turn out to be like Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk and a Warren Buffett. I'm not sure any of them I suppose potentially Elon Musk could be some sort of rogue hero. But I think most billionaires don't look like the ones on the covers of the books, do they?
They don't, no.
I mean, Warren Buffett's a lovely guy. Don't get me wrong. I'm sure he's a nice guy. Yeah. But I don't know if he's got a chiseled torso.
Yeah, there's not a lot of young billionaires, I guess.
But there are a lot in romance. There are loads.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. Yeah, we all kind of write the same things.
Forced proximity is great. I think that's the my little writing groups, you know, I talked a lot to Lucy and she's a big fan of French Kiss, the movie, which is a sort of classic example of forced proximity working and why it works. And it's good for comedy as well. Are your books, I read Lucy's books, a very, very witty writer.
There's always, you know, my stories are very emotional, but as a person myself, like I can't take so much emotional. So there's always like something that's going to, be a character, like a, you know, the grandma that comes in to like give some comedic relief or, you know, there's a lot of brothers in my stories. So the brothers, I mean, if you've ever been around a group of brothers, you know, that there's just always, you know, jokes going on and different things.
Something going on. And are you still writing, do you think, partly therapeutically, or is it now moved on because you're exploring new areas?
You know, I think a lot of it, I found a lot of self-worth in doing this. I found kind of, I definitely found myself in doing it. And so there's still that huge piece in everything that I do. I think if I ever lose that piece, I've lost something that's making my stories connect with people. And so I try really hard to keep that at the forefront of my writing. Remember like what started it and how easy it is to get lost. And I bring that into all the characters. But I also look at it as a business. Like I'm very, you know, even having, you know, Mr. Lucy do a lot of like the business side of stuff, I sit down and make a business plan every year.
Right.
And then I revise it every month. So every month there's a new one. Like what are my goals this month? What do I want to accomplish? Not just with the writing, but with the business side of it. Like so even though he's doing a majority of it, I'm very active in what I want to personally accomplish.
And what do the kids think?
Oh my gosh. So my oldest boy is 12 and he's a numbers guy. So he's all about, you know, seeing the royalties come in. And it was recently it started actually with Lucy's book, Things We Never Got Over. Cause he was like, she's on this list. She's doing this. She's doing that. How much do you think she's making? I'm like, buddy, I don't know. So he would look at my number. He's like, well, if you're making this and she's at this number. And so we called it Lucy math for like a year. He would sit down and he would do all these math problems. Like she's making $14.4 billion this month. That's a little off, but they're, you know, they're very into it. They also struggle a little bit with me working. You know, they'll walk by my doors or glass. They'll walk by and they'll kind of be like, so what do you have to do today? Like, are you almost done? And so I do try really hard now to have a set schedule where I get up, I do my writing while they're at school. So when they get home we have staggered time. So when the first ones get home at 2, I'm with them for 2 hours. We do homework, we do snack, we check in, we talk. Then the older two get home from school and same kind of thing. I check in with them, but then they can go and do their work themselves. So I come back and I start doing my social media check-ins and I, you know, I check in with Mr. Lucy to see if there's anything I need to do. And I've staggered my day so I'm more available because, you know, like I said earlier, I don't think you can have it all. I personally can't have it all. I need to have it all in segments. Yeah. You know, so I can be all in with mom or I can be all in with Avery and I can't do it at the same time.
Yeah.
So I am really good now about making sure that my day is scheduled. I have sticky notes all over my walls telling me what time I need to be doing what. And I have to stick to that schedule because my kids are only going to be little for so long. But at the same time, like I want them to see that I am working and that I have built something all by myself, you know. Yeah. It's important, especially I think for my daughter to see that.
Yeah, definitely. And have any of your children read your books?
No. So my oldest is 15. She, if she wanted to, I think I would let her, but she's absolutely not. She's like, no, just, you know, she's not even, I asked if she wanted to read one of Lucy's books, and right now she's not into it. But her friends, she has some older friends who were like, yes, I want to read. I was like, you need to have your mom's permission. If your mom would like to read it, that's fine. But I can't just give you a book.
No.
They're definitely not kid friendly.
No. Also, I just think for many, you know, I'm trying to imagine what it would feel like reading a sex scene written by my mother. And I just don't, yeah. I don't even want to go there. So I can imagine that's probably best to support you.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I mean, even my husband, he doesn't read a lot of them. Like my reader group will make bets with him. Like if I hit a certain rank or I hit certain things, he'll read it. But it's so different. Like what I write is so different from who I am in everyday life. That he's reading it and he's like, there's so much swearing in this book. I'm like, I know. He's like, but you don't swear. I was like, I know. And then he gets to a sex scene and he's like, I don't know who you are right now. I don't know where is this coming from? I'm like, I just, a lot of wine.
I mean,
a lot
of wine. It's a funny thing, isn't it? Because, you know, no one would ever think of somebody who wrote a psychological thriller. Are you a psycho? You know, but right, romance writers do get a bit of this, don't they? It has to come from somewhere. And it doesn't have to be your life experience, does it, to write? In fact, it isn't 99% of the time when somebody's writing a fiction book, they're fantasizing. And it's, but yeah, I guess you get a bit of that. But yeah, I can imagine I would keep the kids away from it just from an embarrassment point of view because, you know.
Yeah.
But their friends will read it at some point. She'll get a bit older. Next couple of years, some of her friends will have read your books.
Mm-hmm.
But my daughter, I think, may have read one of yours. She became sort of slightly obsessed with Lucy and the Stable of Writers. So I'll have to find out from her. She's in Canada now, but she may have read an Avery Maxwell. I think she kept emailing me all these names she'd read. Oh, she read obviously Colleen Hoover, which was a big one. Then she started going through all these others. So I'll find out.
That's so funny.
Yeah, wow. she's beginning.
I always get surprised.
Yeah, she started writing a little bit as well, so she's quite...
Did she?
Well, until she started her ski season, I think that stopped.
Yeah.
Now, but, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so you must be in a pretty happy place now. I mean, that's what she said. Publishing you, you're focusing on your fans and your writing. And can you give us an idea? Don't have to give numbers, but this is a good living for you?
Yeah. I mean, so before I signed with them, I was doing... Do you want me to...
You can do as much or as little as you want. People love numbers, but I don't want to ever put pressure on somebody.
So when I was doing it myself, I was making between $4,000 and $6,000 a month on my own, except during release times, I would do about $8,000. That's gross. Anything that I made went right back into that. The first couple months after I signed with them, it continued, like, you know, so we split royalties. So my share stayed about the same. And then I released my latest one and I probably tripled what I had made previously.
Was that, you know, magic touch of Mr. Lucy?
It is. It's also, you know, just being able to put more into advertising.
Yeah.
So, you know, the capital behind it, you know, and some months are, you know, I still, like, I have not gone below what I had done on my own with them. And that was kind of like my goal. You know, next year, my goals will be a little higher. I'll be getting away from some of the series and doing more standalone. So my financial goals will be a little higher than they were before. But
yeah. Well, that's great. And you're not spending money on ads yourself. You're not spending money on quite a few of those overheads that get taken on by the publishing company. So that's a nice position to be in. How did that come about? How did that deal come about?
I met them at Indies Made Philly, a book signing last year. And Lucy's assistant, Joyce, had read my books because I was one of the authors there. And she fell down the rabbit hole and read them all. And so I think she was, actually, I know she was a little birdie in Lucy's ear for a long time.
She was your advocate.
She still is my biggest cheerleader. I mean, she's, every time she talks about one of my books, you know, people listen. And she, I think like on my own, I had the best month ever when she started talking about me and Lucy's group. And it just kind of snowballed from there. And so then they were doing a dinner and Joyce called and said, hey, let's come to dinner. Lucy wants to invite you and come and say hi. So I did. I sat with Joyce and I sat with Lucy's brother, Dan, at dinner. And Dan and I hit it off. Dan works for them now, yeah, too. And you know, I talk with Dan pretty much every day. And a few months later, just she sent me a message. She's like, how do you feel about having a meeting? And I was like, sure. She's like, about signing with us. And I was like, yes, please. Like, I don't turn that down. Like, you know, I mean, if you want to do it yourself, you can. But I knew at that point, like, I couldn't keep working 14-hour days and being with the kids. And I knew I was nearing the end of what I could accomplish myself while my kids were this young. So it all just kind of happened, and they took them all. I was in the process of working on audio. Dan had started helping me, kind of telling me where to go with audio. And then they're like, well, we'll take that over too. And so they did. And it's been really great. They're amazing.
And you obviously speak to them quite often, speak to Mr. Lucy quite a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not a fire and forget thing for you. It's not like once a quarter you get a royalty statement from a publishing company. You are involved week to week.
I talk to Dan every day. You know, I talk to Tim quite a bit anytime there's an issue, and he's available all the time. You know, if I have a question or if I want to, you know, recently I wanted to run a sale on book one for signing that I was doing to get new people in reading, and it's very collaborative.
Yeah.
The entire process is collaborative, and they're very, you know, a lot of people are like, well, now you sign, like, now you don't get to write what you want. And that's not how it is with them. No. It's, I bring my ideas to them and they tell me to go for it. You know, it's never been you can't do this, or you have to do it this way. It's, they leave all the creative stuff to me.
Well, your instinct is obviously good for what
I
works.
Hope so. I mean, I don't know. Covers I could probably use a little help with, but thank you.
Finally, I just want to talk about your relationship with readers and how you manage that and what that looks like.
Yeah. So, you know, when I first started, after that first book came out, like I said, I scrambled and I was looking at a lot of what everybody else was doing, and I was trying to emulate what everybody else is doing. And it burned me out really quickly, because I'm not Lucy Score. I'm not Colleen Hoover. I'm Avery Maxwell, you know, and I'm a mess 99% of the time. I've got kids running around. I have two dogs running around. Like, I'm lucky if I remember to brush my hair most days. So I had to take a step back and be like, this, because it wasn't working either. You know, no matter what I was doing, it wasn't working. And so I started taking this class on marketing and promotions. And I was thinking about, what can I sustain? What can I put out in the world every day and feel A, authentic, and B, not feel like I'm giving so much of myself that I don't have anything left? And so I kind of rebranded everything. And the thing that I've always taught my kids, the thing that I say to them every single time they leave the house, is kindness first. Choose kindness, lead with kindness. And so I decided that was going to be my brand, whether it was going to work or not. That's what I could give. You know, give advice on writing or all this other stuff yet, but I can be kind to people. And that's what I built it on. So it's kindness first in everything that I do. And people like it. People started responding to it. They're responding to, you know, we have Messy Monday in my group because I'm a mess. I mean, I have 14 loads of laundry that need to be done. I have dishes that are piled up in the sink. Like, and so I'm really honest with the fact that I struggle day to day getting things done. And that, you know, I have new authors now asking, like, well, how do I do this or how do I do that? And I was like, you have to find the one thing that you can present to the world, feel good about it, and do it genuinely, and put that out there, and people will respond, because they're not looking for another Lucy. They're not looking for another Colleen. They're looking for what you can give them.
And how do you get people into your Facebook group?
So there's links at the back of my books. And I mean, that's the biggest one.
Yeah, that's it.
My newsletter. Yeah. My newsletter, every week that I send a newsletter out, we get like 50 to 100 new people signing up. So it's important for that newsletter.
Do you run your own newsletter?
I do.
Yeah. And how big is that? Do you mind me asking?
No, I think I just hit like 22,000.
Okay, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Romance is a whole different world. You know, my last interviewees were science fiction, and you divide the number by 10 or something for everybody else. But romance is half of all publishing, isn't it? And all the other genres are squeezed into the others. But that is fantastic. And it's incredibly competitive. And yet from that, from a standing COVID start, you've flourished, Avery, and it's been brilliant.
Well, thank you. It's not easy. And that's something that I'm pretty honest about too, is that it's not for the faint of heart. You have to put in the work, and the biggest question I get all the time is how do you fit everything in and how do you do it? And I've always been a huge advocate of, if you want something to happen bad enough, you're going to make it happen. You're going to find the time. You're going to, whether you're exhausted and I'm sitting down, there are times that I'm sitting down and I'm just so tired, but I have a goal. I have 3,000 words to write today. And regardless of if they're crap and I have to erase them tomorrow, I'm going to get them out. And sometimes it's me sitting there just being like, and until the words flow, but you just do it.
Yeah. Well, I know that you really concentrate when you're writing, because there was a moment early in the morning in the house we were sharing in in Florida, and Cecilia Mecca and I were trying to think of imaginative ways to take photographs with you unaware that we were around you. And you were wearing those headphones, I think. You were so locked into your writing. We got closer and closer. In the end, we were either side of you posing for photographs. I'll put some of them up on there, of course, to humiliate you. But that was a fun moment. But I was impressed, joking aside, there's a level of concentration there.
Well, I think that comes with having four kids, honestly.
Yes.
Like you have to be able to tune some things out.
Because I give off a lot of very kid-like vibe, and that just gets blocked out. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to be able to block some things out. And that's why I say, like, I have to really compartmentalize, like, when I do things, because there's always people in my house. There's always little kids running around. There's always, people that need something from me.
Yeah.
So if I'm in writing mode, like, I focus on the screen and I blast music really loudly in my ears. Like, I just tune everything out. Yeah.
I think every mum has a story, don't they, about how a child has walked out of the kitchen past the father all the way to the top of the house to find the mum on the loo to ask him for something in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And the mum is like,
every day,
your dad is in the kitchen.
Yeah.
But, I don't know how we do it as men, but somehow we get this working for us.
Yeah. We were in Florida and I got phone calls from the kids.
Uh-huh.
Like, your dad is right there.
Yeah.
Ask him.
Like, it doesn't work like that. Yeah. I don't make the rules, Avery. Just here abiding by them. Okay. Look, it's been really lovely to catch up with you again. We had such a fun time in Florida, and I hope that we do that again next year, perhaps without the weather event. Might be nice.
Yes, that would be good. I know, I'm excited. I'll definitely be back.
Superb. All right, Avery, thank you so much for joining us, and good luck in the future.
Thank you so much.
This is the Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
There you go. Really fun chatting to Avery. She's a grafter, Mark. She's got four children and moved around the country to a place where there was no, she didn't have much support around, had lockdown to contend with. And I think that did drive her to the point of insanity, which you can imagine teaching four young children. You
had that
too, right?
Two is enough. Yeah. Four. Go on. Shoot myself. I think Avery was, I met Avery at, in Tampa, on the pier. We went for, Nathan Van Koops took a few of us out for a little walk around Tampa, which was really nice. We went down to the pier, down this kind of redeveloped area in Tampa Bay, and had a chat with Avery. And she's, she has had an interesting story. I mean, she had problems with bullying, with kind of online trolling, which got quite unpleasant. But she's basically took the decision that she wasn't going to let that derail her. You may, of course, have mentioned this in the interview, which I haven't listened to yet, but She's a really lovely person and deserves all of the success, and she's getting quite a lot of success now that she's seeing. So I think she's great.
Yes, she really is. I remember that it was a blowy old night on the pier. It was the first outer layers of
it was, and you were saying, I'm staying on
that. There's layers, all going to be fine.
And Nathan was his attitude was like, yeah, there's nothing to worry about. And then as we left, he was like, oh shit. This might be the one. And as it happened, as we mentioned before, it's at the last minute swung south and hit some other friends.
Nathan was right.
He was right in the end, yes. But it was touch and go for a while, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Okay, well, hopefully no hurricanes next year. And we'll talk about our planning for conferences next year, of course, including our very own one in June in future episodes. Okay, that's it for our inter-Nicene period. Not the right word, I know, but I'm going to use it anyway, between Christmas and New Year. Thank you to the team behind the scenes, and thank you especially to Avery for coming on and sharing her story with us. We'll see you next week. All that remains for me to say, I should say, is it's a goodbye from him.
And a goodbye from me. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Get show notes, the podcast archive, and free resources to boost your writing career at selfpublishingshow.com. Join our thriving Facebook group at selfpublishingshow.com/Facebook. Support the show at patreon.com/selfpublishingshow. And join us next week for more help and inspiration so that you can make your mark as a successful indie author. Publishing is changing, so get your words into the world and join the revolution with the Self-Publishing Show.